changing world. Life Changes Network presents a voice of truth and inspiration. This is Life Changes with Filippo, the unforgettable, ever insightful variety show that captivates our fascination and insatiability for the inspiring moments of real life journeys. As we, as one, strive for higher planes of existence and a better understanding of ourselves and the world in which we live, always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with tonight's special guest, acclaimed American singer, composer, songwriter, arranger, producer, and author, Thomas Baylor. And now your host, our MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am excited about today's show. I am excited for many reasons. The main reason is because Thomas Baylor is on our show, and Thomas is a big guy out in the world and has done some really exciting things. And Thomas is a friend. So being able to talk to him about what he's passionate about has always been one of my greatest joys every time we got together. And today we're going to talk about one of his greatest passions, and that's Aesop. And you know, it's interesting, as we were getting ready for this show, we were talking about Aesop amongst the team here at Life Changes and how important Aesop has been in our lives. Ironically, we also talked about Thomas Baylor and how important he's been in our lives. Because he's friends with the whole team, actually, and thanks to Mark Lejeune, who introduced us to him many years ago at this point. But speaking of many years ago, when I was growing up, and most of us within my generation, and even a couple generations younger than me, and certainly a couple generations older than me, we grew up with Aesop's fables. Actually, I take that back. Probably all the generations older than me grew up with Aesop's fables. But in my case, and within this certain period of time, they were turned into cartoons. And we watched them on TV growing up, and we loved them. And I don't know, we found them funny, we found them interesting, we found them engaging, and we watched these cartoons on television. And even my mother would read me Aesop fables, actually in Italian, so they were part of her generation as well, from books that she had. And we'd talk about the morals and all that. And it was actually fun. It was like learning, but it was like not learning. It was most of them were about animals. And so we'd laugh at like the tortoise and the hare, or, the boy who cried wolf, or, you know, the milkmaid and her pail. I mean, I'm sure you all know exactly what I'm talking about. So we'd laugh, or we'd make a story of our own, and this is how they should have done it. And we started getting creative and using our imagination. And then, you know, I have nieces and nephews now, and I sit and watch TV, although rarely with any of them, because their parents would rather they watched videos that they pre-select. But on the rare occasion that we do watch TV, I don't see Aesop fables. And instead what I see is a lot of people-looking cartoons killing each other, literally shooting each other, and having wars against each other, and gaming it seems to be mainly about wars or about battles or about it baffles me, and it's interesting because if you talk to the experts, they'll say, like the TV executives, they'll say that audiences want violence. And this is a direct quote from some big TV executives. Audiences want violence. If that were true, there wouldn't be over 22 million hits on a little video of a baby laughing while ripping a piece of paper on YouTube. Where are those 22 million people? What, they want to see babies laughing on YouTube, but they want to see people killing each other when they turn on the regular TV? Because that's what that's about. After a long day work or whatever, they want to come home to people killing each other, or violence or anger or whatever. That's what they really want. But then they'll turn on YouTube and send each other babies laughing. As a matter of fact, there are more funny videos on YouTube in great proportions, greater proportion. I don't remember exactly the percentage, but studies have been done on this than anything violent. In other words, people aren't creating their own violent videos and putting it up there for everybody to see. I mean, yes, people are doing that. And there are other places where that can be done. Maybe YouTube is less tolerant, but still, there are 22 million people watching a baby ripping a piece of paper. So not only that, we seem to watch TV moments like when something is happening, like a child is being rescued from a hole in some other country somewhere in the world or some other state. And we all gravitate to that and we all talk about that and we all want to know what happens and we all want a happy ending. Well, so people seem to be interested in something other than violence or something other than people fighting against each other. Actually, we have a guest that's going to be on our show here pretty soon who's a really sweet, beautiful lady. And she's in a reality show. And she thought it would be so much fun. And she couldn't wait to do it. And she thought it would change her life for the better. And she is, in some ways, miserable. Because she's very sweet and very nice, but because of the way she looks, and she's very pretty, and she's a model type of person, people, the executives of the TV show say that people want to see her be catty. People want to see her be negative and be not nice and put down other people, especially other women. And that's not her at all. And so they're forcing her to do these things because that's what the audience wants. Well, wait a minute. She's the audience too. And she doesn't want to do this. So where is the disconnect here? And I won't go into it very much more, but there are actual studies, like official FBI reports and U.S. Department of Justice reports that show that the rate of violence crime and violent crimes in the United States are now at their lowest level in over 40 years. And that violent crime rates of 2010 were one-third the rates of 1994. And yet when I'm turning on the news or turning on the radio, I'm hearing about all these awful things happening all over the world, more so than something like this, which is telling me something is changing. And maybe people are interested in laughing babies, even on television. Maybe people are interested, again, in learning about the fables, in learning, like Aesop taught us, through animals and how we all are the same and how we all want the same things and how we all do silly things or how we all can do things better. And it's exciting to me to have a book come out that Thomas Baylor has written that is so positive. But it brings us messages almost from the grave, like from history, from ancient history. Instead of this king fighting that king and that war and this war and world war this and world... It's a simple story about a man who was a slave and then became one of the most important people in the world, actually, an advisor to one of the most people in the world at the time. And this story starts taking place in 620 BC. And that's Aesop. And that's the guy whose fables some of us grew up with. And I can't wait to talk to Thomas more about this because that although that's Aesop, there's so much more to him and so much more than we can learn than just even the fables. And so for that, we're going to cut to a break and come right back with Thomas Baylor right after this.
Clean water is not enough. Reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb and rob minerals from the body. IonWay's ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to six times better. Water from an IONWAYS ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. An ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IONWAYS Water Systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IONWAYS Water Systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
We're back, and we have Thomas Baylor on the show. Now, Thomas Baylor has enjoyed a long and distinguished career in the entertainment industry. He composed music for Quincy Jones, Michael Jackson, directors Steven Spielberg and Barry Levinson, magicians Siegfried and Roy, Super Bowl halftime shows, and a number of other high-profile stage productions. As a songwriter, he's written many hits, including She's Out of My Life. I love it. Living, another song, Living in a House Divided, and Julie, Do You Love Me? Thomas created vocal arrangements for the landmark charity event We Are the World, as well as for Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the motion picture version of The Wiz. He served as music director for a number of events sponsored by the White House, including America's Millennium, Points of Light, and President Clinton's inaugural concert. Tom has also served as music director and arranger for the Kennedy Center Honors, and now he has written this book called Anything is Possible, A Tale of Aesop, and that is his first novel, and I believe this is his very first interview on it, and we are honored to have you here. Thomas Baylor, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here with you, Filippo.
You know, we have not gotten to see each other for such a long time because you went off to Greece to really take in everything that you could since Aesop came from Greece. And you almost like became, I don't know, you almost like had this relationship with him where it was just you and him. I mean, what happened during this time?
When I went to Samos, it was to experience where he lived. I wanted to walk the ground that he walked. And then I went revisit. I've been to Samos several times. And the other times I've gone to Turkey, which is where Lydia was, where King Croesus lived, who was the king for whom Aesop served as an ambassador. And then I also went to Egypt and to Sais, where King Amasis II ruled. And these are all characters in my book, but they're also historic characters. So this was a great amount of fun, and it was wonderful to walk the ground that they walked and look at the mountains that they saw and see the streams that they saw. It was,
It is so you. I mean, when you do something, you completely immerse yourself in something. Like when you were describing to me what it was like working with Michael Jackson or Quincy Jones on We Are the World or other songs and other things, like you were 100% there. Could you describe where does that come from or what goes on in your mind that you just become one with what you're doing?
Well, I think I have to give my father, or gladly give my father credit for that, because as we were growing up, I have a brother who's 2.5 years older, and we were almost like twins. And when growing up, Dad basically said, whatever you undertake, give it all you have and live in it in the moment. So I had some wonderful training from my father, who coincidentally didn't have a father. His father died when he was 4. My brother and I could never figure out where this man became such a blessed father, but he certainly was. So, yeah, I think I was trained that way without being trained.
It does make sense, and I speak from experience, not only knowing you, but I remember one of my fondest memories of you was when you took an energetic alchemy class with Dorothy teaching and me co-facilitating, and you walked in the morning of the first day of the class, and you said, "My day has been so fucked up, right? and you were serious, and yet you were there. And though you stated that, and though you felt that, you completely immersed yourself in everything that the class was about. And within like minutes, it was almost as if you were teaching the other people what you had just absorbed, like almost instantly.
I remember that moment very well. And I also remember the change that I felt. And it was Dorothy and you that brought that about. And that was a wonderful lesson in itself.
You know, as a matter of fact, what you said was, a little later, whether it was an hour or two or whatever, you literally said, "My life is so not fucked up right now." And you had this big smile on your face, and you're just adorable that way. But anyway, what endeared you to? We know what has endeared us to Thomas all these years, from knowing you and also from knowing your music and some of what you've done. You've made a lot of people happy. You've made a lot of people smile. What was it that endeared you to Aesop?
Well, I loved his fables, as most of us did growing up. And I was filling a library. I bought a home with a library, and I was filling it with books. And I was subscribing to a lot of book, subscriptions. You know, they would come in. I'd get 6 or 8 books a month, and I would look through them and read the prefaces to all of them. And when Aesop's Fables came through, I was warmed just looking at the title, thinking back to these wonderful stories. And when I read the preface, it began a change in my life. The preface said something on the order of, Aesop was born in 620 BC, a slave with no access to wealth or influence. Yet later in his life, he served as ambassador to King Croesus of Lydia, who was the wealthiest and most powerful man in the world. And at that point, I asked a question, which was, how did he do that? And the instant that I asked that question, Filippo, I felt a surge of energy go through me that was a little shocking, and it was like a chill, but it wasn't cold. And from that moment on, I thought about him every day. Now, at the moment that happened, I was in the studio with Quincy Jones and Michael Jackson. I'd worked with Michael since he was 11, and Quincy and I had been friends at this point for a good 5-6 years and worked together a lot. And the next morning, Quincy and I used to do yoga every morning, and I picked him up and told him about this experience that I had. And one of the things that makes Quincy is he said, "Hey, man, go with that. Go with it. Go with it. Follow it. See where it's taking you." You know, and my father was like that too. I mean, it's great for me to be encouraged to follow a moment, and I try to do that with the people that I mentor, because I think when you're mentored, you want to mentor others. You know, it started growing in me, and then my life started to change. Soon I was asked to go to become creative director. This was within weeks of reading this preface. I was asked to be the creative director by one of my other mentors at Radio City Music Hall. His name is Robert Effiani, and he was an amazing man. And I said, "Well, I'm in the middle of an album with Michael and Quincy." And he said, "Well, it's up to you." So I went back and told Quincy, who also knew Bob, and I said, "I got this offer to go to Radio City and be a creative director." And he said, "Oh, Ned, you got to do this. You got to do this. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity." So he kicked me out of the nest. It was wonderful. And I went, did the show with Bob, and it was a hit. And all of a sudden, Tommy Volando called, and he wanted to talk to me about the music that I'd written for the show. And he asked me if I had any ideas for a musical. And I said, "Well, this guy Aesop's been running around my head for months now, and I think about him all the time." And he said, "This is a great idea. You give me a year of your time, and I will walk you through this." So I went back to Bob. Bob said, "How was your meeting with Tommy?" And I said, "Well, he said that he would walk me through writing this if I would give him a year of my time. But I explained that I've only been with you for 3 months." And Bob says, "You got to do this." So Bob kicked me out of the nest. And it was wonderful. And then I've spent the time with Tommy, And it took off as, because being a composer and a songwriter, it was natural for me to take this story that was starting to play in my head like a movie. Mm. And take it into a musical. That was a very natural progression for me being a composer. And as I did it, it was great fun, but at the same time, it was, I found that I had way too much story for a musical.
Mm.
And I tried many, many ways of making this work. We wrote it as an opera. I did it as about three different musicals. And the comments were the same all the time. Too much story. So then a friend, a writer friend of mine, suggested that I write it as a novel. And I thought, I've never written a novel. And I think I said that to him. And he said, well, Tom, there was a time when you hadn't written a song either.
I thought, oh, interesting.
Thank you. And at that point, I made a decision to write this as a novel. And, you know, when we make decisions, things start to happen. Mm. And within 3 weeks, our friend Mark Lejeune and I were in a meeting about another project, and they had brought in this woman, Lindy Stoller, and we all sort of talked about ourselves because nobody knew each other. And when I mentioned Aesop, her eyes got big as saucers. And afterwards, she said, wow, what a great idea. You should write this as a novel. And I said, well, that's what I decided to do. The only problem is I've never written one, and I don't know where to start. And she said, I'm your girl. So here she shows up out of the entire universe as my coach. And she did a marvelous job. I love Lindy. We spent 2 months in strategy, and that was how we're going to tell the story. And then when I started writing the story, the great thing about a coach is they do not get into your content. They're not a co-writer. What they do is what Lindy did, Lindy never touched my content, but how I delivered my content, she was all over like white on rice.
Hmm.
So as I'm writing the book, I would send her a chapter at a time. And I love Lindy because she's not like a mother coddler. She was very businesslike. And she would call and say, okay, I got this chapter, page 3. What in the world are you talking about? And I said, well, so-and-so and so-and-so. And she goes, oh, that's wonderful. It's not in the book.
It was in your head.
Yeah, so I realized that I had not gotten on the bed. That, to me, is a great coach. And then after I finished the book, she finally gave me a compliment. She said, you know, I think you have something good here, and the third phase of my work with you is to introduce you to agents. I cannot guarantee that you'll be signed, but I will introduce you to them. And she's well thought of in the industry, and I met a number of agents, and actually 6 were all interested in it, but 3 were particularly interested, and they were all under 35, and I thought that bode well for my story. And I made the great decision to go with Kirsten Neuhaus, who is my agent and sort of the mother of Aesop. The whole team that we have now, I feel very grateful for, because they are as invested in this story and this book as I am. And it's wonderful when you have people emailing you and calling you and writing you and saying, hey, I was just thinking about this. What if, you know, especially in the marketing phase of what we're doing now, you know, what if we said this? What if we said that? And it's so wonderful to see everybody excited about, you know, where every day it's growing. And we're in paperback now. We started an ebook. We're on Nook. We're on Amazon. We're starting to show up in bookstores. And it's available on paperback through Nook, through Amazon. Excuse me. And the Greeks love this book, Filippo. The best compliment I had, because I spent a lot of time in Samos.
Right.
I brought the book over for them, and there were many Greeks that read it. And in fact, a few Greek historians went through and helped me adjust some things.
Oh, wow.
I was very, very appreciative of that. Because while this is a fictional story, a reimagining of Aesop's life, I wanted to make sure that when I was talking going on historically was actually happening. And so we've done our homework on that. The best thing that the Greeks said about my book is you would never know a non-Greek wrote this.
Well, actually, in a way, though I haven't finished the book, I certainly have started and can't wait to delve into it more. But in a way, it's not only you would never know a non-Greek wrote this, it almost feels as Aesop wrote it himself.
Well, I would agree with that, you know. I learned from my father very early on that the way we create is to listen. And I didn't ask for this story. I didn't ask to be doing what I'm doing today. But I listened and I went with it. And I would agree with you. I mean, I think Aesop did write his own story. Somehow I became a vessel. And it's like no other experience I've ever had. I've written a lot of music, you know. And I love writing music, and it comes in the same way. But because it's music, it didn't really have necessarily a personality of a person. But when Aesop's story came in, I kept seeing him. So, you know, that is what it is. But I'm proud to be the vessel for this, and I feel grateful for that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the things that I've always loved and appreciated about you is no matter what you're describing, you make it sound like it's the most incredible thing and you bring it to life. And when you started talking about Aesop, you brought him to life to me by the stories you would tell me. Now, sure, I grew up with The Boy Who Cried Wolf or, you know, the Tortoise and the Hare and all of that. So I already knew them. I didn't need to be sold on them. But when you started to make a connection to who he was and what he did and what he accomplished besides just the fables and the stories of the fables, all of a sudden it takes on a whole new meaning. And actually, that's what I want to talk about as soon as we come back from a break here. But before we go into the break, Thomas, I know we can find the book on Amazon and a bunch of other places, but what website would you direct us to?
Well, we have our own website. It's called anythingaesop.com, or if you just if you were to Google Thomas Baylor, B-A-H-L-E-R, it will take you to that website. I also have an author page on Facebook, and you can buy the book there. We also have some wonderful I'm having so much fun on the author page and Facebook because I'm starting to have conversations with my readers. And it's just glorious. I love it. So I invite people to that. Those are the main places online that, you know, go to our website or our Facebook author page.
Okay, and Anything Aesop is a great website, as you mentioned. And for those who don't know, Aesop is spelled A-E-S-O-P. So anything, A-E-S-O-P.com. You'll find the book there, and you'll find more about our guest today, Thomas Baylor, and we'll be talking with him some more right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website,
at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
Well, we're back, and our guest today is Thomas Baylor, if you're just joining us, and we're talking about his first novel, Anything is Possible, A Tale of Aesop. Now, one of the most fascinating things about Aesop and the book, to me, is that as I started reading it, I thought, oh yeah, this is kind of like what The Secret is talking about, and the film and the book, and yeah, this is kind of like what so-and-so says and what Abraham says, and oh, wait a minute. This took place in 620 BC. This story is about a man who was a slave, and yet I'm reading it as if it's something that was today, that it happened today, and somebody changed their life today. Slaves didn't become free men back then. It just didn't happen. And here's a man who did. And Thomas, you do such a great job of bringing that to life and bringing it into our consciousness in the sense of, can you see what this man did? And this is how he did it. Can you share with us the this is how he did it without giving too much away?
Well, yes. I think one of the reasons that this story is relevant today, even though it was set in 600 BC during Aesop's life, is that human nature has not changed. Mm. And the more I delved into Aesop, fables, the more I really drilled down, and if you live with something long enough, it becomes a part of you. And these fables started to just kind of circulate in my bloodstream. And what came out of that for me was that Aesop had a love for humanity. He did not preach. His fables are not about religion or culture or politics. They're about human nature. And we accept them because so many of them are written about animals, which we can all listen to. And the fable itself, he created the fable. And the fable as a form is a story in which the listener discovers the meaning. So it would be one thing for me to come up to you, Filippo, and tell you that I think something of you. That let's say that I don't like your hair, which would be the furthest thing from the truth, because in reality, I'm very jealous of it. But if I were to come up and say, Filippo, I don't think that haircut looks good. Well, somewhere deep inside you, you're thinking, buzz off. Mm. However, if I were to tell you a story in which a man had hair like yours and some tragedy happened to him, you might be thinking, maybe I should do something about this hair.
Mm.
And you would not think anything of me. Now, that's just a silly example, but that is exactly how his fables worked. If you were talking about the milkmaid and the pail,
Right.
She has everything she needs. Or the goose who laid the golden egg. This man had an egg. This man had a goose who laid a golden egg every morning. And if he would have let that goose live its time on earth, he would have been a wealthy man. But he assumed that there was a gold bar inside of her, and he wanted it. So he cut her open and killed the very thing that was giving him wealth.
Mm.
And while that is such a simple story, we all know that the meaning of it is profound. And again, the listener discovers that. There's a wonderful story in the book that's one of his fables too, about a man who had worked all of his life, and when he retired, he took everything he owned and he sold it and bought a gold bar. And he buried that gold bar in the backyard, and every day he dug it up and he just looked at it. And then he would cover it up and go back in the house. Well, one day when he did that, there was a workman across the yard who looked across the fence and saw him doing this, and he, as soon as the old man went in the house, he dug the bar up and absconded with it. Well, the next morning, the old man comes out and digs up the bar, and he shrieks, the bar is gone. And his neighbor comes over and says, what is wrong? And he says, why is this gold bar in there? And it's gone. Somebody stole it. And he said, well, may I suggest you do this? Find a rock, put it where the gold bar was, and call it gold, because when it was gold, you did nothing with it.
Interesting. You know, Thomas, as I'm listening to you and as I remember other conversations we have had about this, I just came to something that yes, this story is really, really relevant. And what makes it interesting is that, and even more important, is that he was a slave. However, what I think is now even more interesting and even more important is that these fables didn't come about even though he was a slave. These fables came about because he was a slave. And if he had not been a slave, we might not have these fables in this way for us to be able to benefit from generation to generation. Because as you have said, because he was a slave, he couldn't tell his master what to do or give him suggestions. He could only tell a story.
It's very true. And, you know, this was the fun of having his story hit the paper. That's the only way I can describe it, because writing this was such a joy. And I couldn't wait to get to my computer, because it would just start flowing out of me. And in it, the story, I was able to describe, well, first of all, we start with his birth, you know, and we take him all, he's still alive at the end of the story. So I'm on the second book already, because this is a series of the life and times of Aesop. But what was fun was being able to see as he grew, and then I would recognize that here we are in a place in the story where one of his fables fits so perfectly, and it would fall into place. And then I would back up a little bit and go through the mechanizations of his thinking, where he told the story of the crow and the pitcher. You know, the story of the crow and the pitcher is the crow's flying along. He's very thirsty. He can't find water anywhere. He sees a pitcher. He flies down, but the neck of the pitcher is so narrow that he can't get his head inside to get to the water, which is down inside. And so he tries to push it over, and he's way too weak. And finally, he flies off and starts bringing pebbles and drops them into the water till the water rises and he can get a drink. Well, the interesting thing about that story is it's true. Crows do this, and now they've proved it. They proved it in laboratories, and so since I figured that, well, if they proved it now, then it was happening then. So in my story, when he begins to find this opportunity to tell this story, he creates it at the moment, and he draws on what he actually saw. He saw a crow do this. So, and in my story, he saw a crow do this, so then he delivers the story. And it was actually the way that he was bought by the philosopher who changed his life. So these were the great moments for me as a writer to be able to experience this while it's going on. Does that make sense?
It does. It makes a lot of sense. And it's great to be experiencing this with you as this is going on, because you're just at the beginning of this exciting ride, though. You've been with Aesop all these years, and you've shared him with some of your friends and music friends and all of that. This is now the time to share it with the world. And if there's a man that has had the most influence on the world, like we can mention just a handful of people that the whole world knows about, at least as I know it, who doesn't know the rabbit and the hare? Who doesn't know the boy who cried wolf? I think this is fascinating, and certainly something whose time has come. And speaking of which, so you're already alluding to the fact that you've got a second book coming, that this is a musical, an opera, and maybe even something else?
Well, the current book that we have now, there is a producer in Hollywood who wishes to remain anonymous at the moment, but you and I know who she is, and who has fallen in love with this story and wants to do it as a film. And she has got a great record and a great resume of bringing books to film. So we're thrilled about that. I still want my musical, but now that we have his story on paper, we can do a musical, because as you know, musicals and movies are usually reflections of greater works. I mean, as great as Gone in the Wind was, it was a reflection of that book. It wasn't the book.
Mm-hmm.
And and books that are written, and the same thing with, let's take a, one of my favorite books is Revolutionary Road. That's a great film. But that's a reflection of that book. So now that we have, I have Aesop's story into Anything Is Possible, that musical is going to be written. I think we're going to do it as a film first. Then we'll do it as a musical. And that's an exciting, very exciting future for us. And at the same time, I'm writing the second book. And I believe, we're not counting because I find that if I just go in the moment, everything works out fine. And I have actually put the second book on hold because we are in the midst of marketing this book. So I will return to that very shortly. And I plan on going back to Samos and staying there and writing it on the island where he lived.
Well, you certainly took the advice that Quincy Jones gave you, and you went with that, and you followed it, and like everything else you do, you just go in 100%. And this is really exciting. How is Thomas in all of this? I mean, you sound excited. You sound like you're having the time of your life, but. Where is Thomas in all of this?
Thomas is having the time of his life. I've never been so happy. I'm happy with my relationships with my family and my friends, and I'm making new friends all the time. And I'm loving being an author. I love being a writer. I will always. I'm also writing a song cycle, composing a song cycle on the poetry of Hafiz, and I think you know that.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying everything that I do, and by the way, I just started playing my flugelhorn a few weeks ago because I grew up with a trumpet in my mouth. And what I find is that there's no reason to hide our light under a bushel, and we are all unique. And we have no competition. We are each of us a fingerprint. And I'm finding that the more that I use of the gifts that were given me, and this was another thing my father said that stayed with me. He said, son, your talent is your gift from God. What you do with it is your gift to God.
Oh, that's right. I've heard you say that before. That's
yes.
I love that.
And when I picked up, I actually went to hear a jazz singer a few weeks ago that someone asked me to go see. And it's one of those things, I get asked to listen to singers, 20 of them a week. And I went there to just be cordial and listen. And, I was walking with no expectations and stayed for three sets. And her trio was so exciting. And she is so exciting and so ebullient that I felt myself wanting to sit in with the band. So I told the guys, I said, I haven't thought about this for a long time, but I kind of want to sit in. And they said, well, do it. And I thought, well, my flugelhorn's in storage in California. So I just picked up another one the other day. And that is another area. And I was with Russ Teitelman last night, and Joe Henry was another wonderful author. And they were sitting with me last night, and I was sitting in my chair improvising. And they both looked at me, and they said, we didn't know you did this. So how fun to just, as we go through our lives, just to use the things that we've been given.
Right.
And to share them with other people.
Right. A very wise man once told me when I was trying to decide whether I should be a singer, a composer, or an author, he's a painter also at the time. He said to me, Filippo, it's not the medium. It's what you're trying to do. And what you're trying to do is communicate and express and share. So what's important is for you to get in touch with your message. And then you can use all of that, all of those different media, or you could use just one. It doesn't matter. And that's what I see that you're doing here, is that you have taken all of your expression and you've at times put it into music and now put it into a book. And if you pick up the flugelhorn, that flugelhorn is going to express like it never did before. So more power to you, my friend.
Thank you. And this is all ties in with Aesop in my mind as well, because this is what he did. He was a fortunate man in being educated. And as you read the book, you'll see how he was educated and why. And then when he went from being in a pretty good situation to abject slavery, he did what all of us would do personally. It's like, why did this happen to me? I did everything everybody asked me to do, yada, 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 the stuff that we do that gets us into the hole. And I heard a guy once say, if you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. Mm-hmm. And that's what Aesop did. He finally asked himself, what's different between my life now and then? And he's, as he started to just look at him as an observer, he realized that even though he was a slave, he was in charge of himself. So he was actually free.
Mm.
And once he realized that, his life changed.
Mm.
Because he knew in his heart that he was free. He thought, well, my mom was great to me. Well, that's wonderful. It was easy to go along with her. But whose choice was it to go along with her? It was mine. And my master educated me, called me Bright Eyes. Well, that was wonderful. It was easy to do. But who made that choice to accept that? Me. So I'm in charge of me.
You know, actually, Thomas, you illustrate that so well in the book in a couple different ways. And one of them is by bringing in Theseus's son, who chose not to go along with it, right? Who had
exactly.
all the opportunities yes. in the world.
Yes. And how many people do we know like Acacius, you know? And that's not to be negative about him, but I know people like this who things come their way and they kind of go, okay, fine, you know, but they don't really make, I think when we exert ourselves, that's when joy begins. This is my opinion. And it's wonderful to receive a gift, but don't we feel better when we give a gift?
Mm. I do, but that's, yeah, I thought that was just me.
Yeah, I think we all do. And of course, that's a two-way street. All relationships are a two-way street. So I have learned so much from Aesop, just in writing about him, and into really absorbing his fables. And there are 646 of them out there, and I can tell you that they're not all his, because it became a genre. And mm-hmm. And I cannot tell you how I can tell the ones that he wrote and the ones he didn't. But I can. So I'm sticking to the ones that I know came from him, and I just know it in my heart.
Well,
and this is a test, so.
Well, obviously, your heart has spoken and spoken well. Quincy Jones says about the book, "Anything is possible is an extraordinary read, a thought-provoking exploration of freedom. It will inspire anyone who has ever dreamed of a better life." And as Thomas says, the level of our success is limited only by our imagination. The book is Anything is Possible, A Tale of Aesop. You can go to www.anythingaesop, that's anything, AESOP.com, to learn more about the book, to purchase the book, and of course, to learn more about Thomas Baylor. And I sure hope that you're going to incorporate a speaking tour around this or a book signing or something, because I think people are going to want to meet the man who brought Aesop back to life and know more about you. Thomas, thank you so much for being with us and for being who you are.
Well, thank you, Filippo, and it's been a pleasure hearing your voice again and to be with my good friends and the whole organization. So thank you for inviting me. Yeah. And yes, we do have a speaking tour in the works right now. I'll let you know more about it.
Yes, do. And we'll post that on Life Changes with Filippo and on lifechangesnetwork.com so people can come and meet you and experience you as we have. And speaking of your friend, Mark LeJure, he will be right back with us as we do our producer's wrap right after this.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
Well, we're back with our producer segment with Mark LeJour, and we've been talking to Thomas Baylor about his book, Anything is Possible, A Tale of Aesop. Mark, thank you so much for introducing us to Tom way back when. Who knew we would come to all of this and so much more?
Well, it was so heartwarming to hear him tell the story and to talk about his journey on this, and to do it, you know, with us as we're sharing our journey. Anybody that has been close to Thomas or spent time in his space, listening to his music, enjoying his creativity, knows that that you can't be around him for a minute or more without being impacted at some level. So now to see him channel this into the literary space and more so the informational space, the empowerment space that he does with Aesop's work and this revisioning is pretty fantastic.
You know, it's interesting. This is indeed Life Changes. And earlier when he and I were talking as we were getting ready to get on the radio, he was saying how much his life had changed, and he was commenting on certain aspects of his life and how we have been a part of that. And of course, he's been part of our life changes and continues to be. And as I've often said, it seems like we're doing a company here and doing a show, but what we're really doing is not only helping people change their lives for the better, but changing our own, and it's very cool.
That you know what, we should maybe name the show after that.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, I mean, for some people, Life Changes is not the show or the title, but just when someone said, hey, you know, well, Life Changes, usually that's been used as a negative term. And it's because of our ignorance about it. It's because of our fear about it, because life changes is a constant. And the more we embrace it and the more we allow it with ease and grace, the easier it is to incorporate the changes. And a lot of them, if not maybe most of them, sometime can actually be for the better.
Well, you can't hide from it, right? It's the one thing we all have in common. So to keep it relevant to the work, this book, Anything is Possible, you were talking about the relevance and the timelessness of the information. I think even more so, let's extrapolate on not just the subject matter and the fables and the timeless wisdom, but look what is going on this planet in this now, and you know, in these moments. Look at the massive movements and efforts toward freedom across multiple countries. Mm. Look at the massive movement toward freedom of information. Look at the massive movement towards freedom from suppression, freedom from religious dogmas, you know, freedom of one's own mind and the spiritual movement. There's so much going on right now across so many spectrums, sociologically, politically, spiritually, and then some. And now you'd go back and you look at the timelessness of that information and look at its relevance.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, I wonder if this is somehow all built into the matrix. Is everybody just wants to feel like they can overcome this, so it's built in. I wonder if it'll ever not be here. Like we'll all get to the other side of it. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, there's certainly many theories about that. But if you go back to what Thomas was saying in terms of telling stories about animals and the ability to be heard, Aesop's ability to be heard in that manner, boy, doesn't that ring true today? Because you know, it's very hard for people to hear information that relates directly to themselves or that challenges their belief system or that challenges their ego. But they can certainly take the information away and own it if it was told in such a way that it's about someone or something else. And I think that's what's the big takeaway here.
Yes, it is, and I'm glad you brought that up. I agree. And another one is that, you know how so many of us, and myself included, like, I could have been this if only, or by now I could have achieved if only. And it's interesting here to have thousands and tens of thousands, thousands of years looking back, and somebody could say to Aesop, you are one of the most famous men in the world, whether people know it or not. I mean, his stories exactly. Not because you became somebody, whatever, but because you were a slave. And it's because you were a slave. I mean, it's like, it's a good thing in the sense that that's what made you famous, because you had to bring on, you had to go someplace else. Anyway, we need to talk about that at some point. That's something that I really want to focus on at some point. I don't know if it's blog or whatever, but we'll talk about it. In the meantime, we've got to go. So with that, I, along with our producer, Mark Lejeune, and Dorothy Donahue, and our engineer for the day, Don Newson, thank you for being part of the show and part of the positive changes we all wish to see in the world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network, and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes.